Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Boys of Dunbar, a story of love, hope, and basketball, by Alejandro Danois. Narrated by Myron Willis. I like to hear of wealth and gold, and El Dorados in their glory. I like for silks and satins bold to sweep and rustle through a story. The nightingale is sweet of song. The rare exotic smells divinely. And knightly men who stride along the role heroic carry finely. But then, upon the other hand, our minds have got a way of running to things that aren't quite so grand, which, maybe, we are best in shunning. For some of us still like to see the poor man in his dwelling narrow, the hollyhock, the bumblebee, the meadowlark, and chirping sparrow. We like the man who soars and sings with high and lofty inspiration, but he who sings of common things shall always share our admiration. Common Things by Paul Laurence Dunbar. Prologue. Like Brothers. The seeds of this book took root on the playgrounds of Brooklyn, New York, in the early 1980s. A hoops fanatic, I spent countless mornings, afternoons, and evenings playing against my friends in the tilting, fenced-in concrete courts of the East New York, Bedford-Stuyvesant, Starrett City, Clinton Hill, and Fort Greene neighborhoods. The steel rims were bent at oblique angles, slowly succumbing to years of violent dunks. The withered paint identifying the half-court, free-throw, and out-of-bounds lines had been rubbed raw by generations of abuse at the heels of rubber-soled sneakers. In the frigid, early winter mornings, when exhaling created a mirage of cotton clumps floating out of our mouths, my buddies and I shoveled the snow, ice, and slush that layered the courts to get a game going. On oppressively humid nights, we scattered from our apartments, like roaches at the flick of a light switch, into drenching downpours. The suction created by the wet elements allowed us to palm our favorite orange basketball, balled from years of fights against the unforgiving blacktop. We stacked nickels earned from returning empty soda cans and purchased sets of tight netting woven together in the patriotic ensemble of red, white, and blue. The nets dangled from the rims, like diamonds from the earlobes of a stunning woman. Cosmetics aside, the true reward was the sweeter-than-Kool-Aid sound of a perfect jump shot rippling through the twine before spinning back toward Earth. Invariably, the nets would vanish in a day or two. I imitated the ball-handling wizardry that was coded into the DNA of New York City point guards, and dedicated many a solitary session to honing a jump shot that I was sure would lead me to Madison Square Garden and a lucrative contract with my New York Knicks. On a few occasions, I shared the court behind my apartment building with my neighbor, a teenage man-child who was lustily pursued by the slick recruiters representing this country's premier institutions of higher basketball. He was a star at Brooklyn Technical High School, all-city, and on a direct flight out of the neighborhood, climbing onward and upward toward a shot at the NBA. I would rebound his missed shots, staring with reverence at his sparkling white Chuck Taylor Converse sneakers. I wondered if, one day, I too would be blessed with the same massive musculature that he packed onto his 6'8" frame. In 1983, that neighbor, Lorenzo Charles, would go on to author the most famous ending in NCAA Finals history.